Welcome to the Care to Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. And as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Mary. I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's teleconference program, Medical Update on T-Cell Lymphomas. And today's program is focusing on an update on peripheral T-cell lymphoma. This is part one of a two-part series. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care, the Lymphoma Research Foundation, the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and many other cancer organizations. And it's because of that collaboration that we have been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have on the call today over 528 participants, so there's a lot of you on the call today. And you come from all over the United States. You come from large cities and small cities, from suburban areas as well as rural and frontier communities. And you also, we have many international participants on the call today, which might be of interest to all of you. We have participants from Africa, Australia, Canada, Denmark, the Dominican Republic, Egypt, Israel, Greece, Norway, Pakistan, Poland, Puerto Rico, Saudi Arabia, Singapore, Venezuela, and the United Kingdom. So you truly come from all over the world, and what a wonderful group of information seekers to have joined us today. Now, I would like to turn your attention to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is an outline that our speakers have prepared. There's information about all the different collaborating organizations with their toll-free numbers and websites as additional resources for you to have after this call ends. You also have an evaluation form, and we ask you to take a moment at the end of today's program and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the topics that we'd like us to offer going forward? Indeed, today's program and this entire series is one that many of you have requested on a number of occasions over and over again in our programs, and we're able to offer it. Now, I want to say that today's program is supported through unrestricted educational grants to the Lymphoma Research Foundation from Allos Therapeutics, Inc., Celgene Corporation, and the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and we really want to thank them for this support. Now, we have wonderful speakers today, and I want to begin the program by introducing our first speaker, Dr. Stephen Hurwitz. Dr. Hurwitz is Assistant Attending Physician, Lymphoma Service, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And he is going to really start this off and provide an overview of peripheral T-cell lymphoma. He's going to discuss its biology and pathology and current treatment approaches. Dr. Hurwitz?
Thank you, and thanks. It's really a pleasure to be here. It's really impressive, the number of people and the number of different countries people are calling in from, you know, really for what we generally think of as a pretty uncommon disease. So I was going to start by just talking about a little bit about peripheral T-cell lymphoma, sort of a basic framework for how we think about them in the medical community and how we put them in context with other lymphomas, and then talk a little bit about the diagnosis and some of the standard treatments that we use. So I think just to start along those lines, there's a few basic things that we should all understand about lymphoma, and this sort of applies in particular to T-cell lymphomas. And that's first that lymphomas are cancers of a kind of white blood cell called a lymphocyte. So we have normal white blood cells in our body that do their normal job in the immune system. And when those cells become changed in a way that they either grow too much or those cells don't die normally, you can accumulate them. And if that accumulation we feel is from a cancer of lymphocytes, we call that a lymphoma. And I think that's important when thinking about the T-cell lymphomas, because most of the lymphomas that we have show up primarily in lymph nodes. And the T-cell lymphomas can show up in lymph nodes, but they also have a tendency to show up outside of lymph nodes, and sometimes there's a little confusion. If you have a cancer outside of a lymph node, is it really a lymphoma? And in this case, that's really referring to the cell that it comes from, which is a lymphocyte. I think some other basic things to understand is that at least in the United States, we have somewhere between about 55 or 60,000 cases of lymphoma a year. And in the U.S., about 10% of those will be in the families of T-cell lymphomas. We'll talk a little bit about some different kinds. As we get to other parts of the world, particularly the Far East, those ratios are a little different in T-cell lymphomas. are a bit more common. If any of you have gone on the internet or looked at sort of the current classifications of lymphomas, you'll see that it's really become very complex. So we have this group called the WHO, or the World Health Organization, that meets to try to review and classify and put out a system of the different kinds of lymphomas. And if they look at the different lymphomas that we recognize as sort of a discreetly identifiable disease, you know, that a pathologist or an oncologist could identify, we come up with about 60 or even more different kinds of lymphoma. Maybe about 20 or so of those will be in the broad family of T-cell lymphomas. So really, even within that idea of T-cell lymphoma, which is a pretty uncommon disease, there's a whole bunch of different kinds. And I think for a lot of people, that makes getting accurate information very difficult and a little bit confusing. Before I go too much into the different kinds, I just want to talk a little bit about some basic concepts in sometimes how doctors think about lymphomas. And we really tend to separate lymphomas into a group of diseases which we call indolent or low-grade, and a group of diseases which we call aggressive or used to call intermediate-grade. And what that generally refers to when we talk about it is how fast do those lymphomas grow. So there's a whole group of lymphomas that tend to grow very slowly, and we call those indolent or low-grade lymphomas. They tend to grow slowly over years. Some of them don't need treatment. Sometimes they're just observed. Most of the T-cell lymphomas don't fit into that category. There are a group of T-cell lymphomas that show up primarily in the skin, sometimes referred to as cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, and some of those have that very slow growth pattern. Most of the peripheral T-cell lymphomas we tend to fall under the more aggressive category, and that means that those lymphomas tend to grow over some months. So they tend to grow and make people sick, and those are usually the kinds of things that we would treat when they're recognized. A couple of points on terminology. When you look at the different names for the lymphomas, you'll come across a term called peripheral T-cell lymphoma. And what that really refers to is a mature T-cell lymphoma. So if we go back to how lymphocytes or how the normal cells develop, they usually initially come from the bone marrow. That's where most of the white blood cells are made. And then a cell like a lymphocyte, when it's first grows, it's an immature cell, meaning it doesn't know its specific job in the immune system. Lymphocytes get sort of educated, or they go through some changes that allow them to have a specific job in the immune system. I kind of make the analogy, when you get a flu shot, your lymphocytes learn to fight that year's flu, and those cells are sort of educated through a way. And that process we really, for the T-cell lymphomas, changes them from an immature to a mature T-cell lymphoma. The term peripheral T-cell lymphoma refers to that whole group of mature T-cell lymphomas. And it's a little confusing because the term peripheral makes it sound like it's somewhere in the body, and we also have cutaneous or skin-only T-cell lymphomas. But peripheral really just describes that cell type. So most of the different kinds of lymphomas fall under the broad category of peripheral T-cell lymphoma. To make it more confusing, we do use the term cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, which refers to a group of diseases that are only in the skin or primarily in the skin. Most of those are actually under the broad category of peripheral T-cell lymphoma, meaning that the cell that they come from is a mature T-cell, though the way they show up in people and the way they behave is a little different when they're only in the skin. And then when we look at all the different types of T-cell lymphoma, the 20 or so different types, the most common type carries the same name as the whole group, so it's called peripheral T-cell lymphoma, not otherwise specified, which I think just sort of adds to the confusion. But that would be the most common type of an aggressive T-cell lymphoma. So if I haven't totally confused everybody with that, I'll talk a little bit about the different ways that we can think about them. So we talked a little bit about most of the peripheral T-cell lymphomas tend to be aggressive, meaning they tend to grow over months. Many of them show up in lymph nodes. Some of them show up in some unique places outside of lymph nodes. So there's certain kinds of lymphomas that tend to show up in the nasopharynx. That's called nasal NK T-cell lymphoma. There's certain types of T-cell lymphomas or aggressive T-cell lymphomas that show up in the skin. And there's certain types of aggressive T-cell lymphoma that tend to show up in lymph nodes, certain types that tend to show up in the liver or spleen. If you look at a long list, it gets a little complicated to go over all on the phone, but there's a whole bunch of different kind of T-cell lymphomas, and I think if someone is given one of these diagnoses, kind of the best thing to do at that point is try to understand as specifically as possible what the name of your disease is, and then try to find out specific information about that. We really don't have time now to go into the details of all the different types of T-cell lymphoma, but that would be sort of my advice, is to try to understand as specifically what you have. I'm now going to talk a little bit about generalities about diagnosis and then a little bit about treatment and then hand it over to Dr. Rosen. So a couple of things about the diagnosis of T-cell lymphomas. I've tried to explain that there's a lot of different types, and they're fairly uncommon. So one of the things that we think a lot about when we see a patient with a new diagnosis of T-cell lymphoma is, do we have the right diagnosis, or do we truly understand what that person has? One of the ways we do that, or the main way we do that, is by getting a good biopsy and having that reviewed by the pathologist. Needle biopsies or biopsies that are done through the skin often get very small amounts of tissue, and those are things called fine needle aspirates and sometimes called core biopsies. And when you have a very uncommon lymphoma, you can sometimes be handicapping the pathologist a little bit in helping you understand what kind of lymphoma that is when you only give them a very small piece of tissue. Sometimes there's not a better way to get more tissue, but whenever there is, we try to provide the pathologist with as good a biopsy as possible. And we worry a little bit if the initial diagnosis is made on a very small sample. And sometimes we'll go back and ask people to have additional biopsies done just to make sure we understand that. Part of that is because making the diagnosis of T-cell lymphoma and figuring out which specific kind it is difficult and often requires a lot of additional tests by the pathologist. And each of those tests that they have to do requires more tissue. So the bigger piece of tissue we give them, the bigger chance they have of really looking at all the information. The other thing that we're pretty aware of is how often we can reliably make this diagnosis. So one of the things that we know from looking at some large series of people who've been diagnosed with this is that there's a lot of knowledge on the part of the pathologist, but some of the diagnosis also falls into the category of opinion. So sometimes if one pathologist looks at it and thinks it's this kind of T-cell lymphoma, another very good pathologist might look at it and come up with a different impression. So we try to be real careful to make sure we have a good diagnosis and that the pathologist who's made the diagnosis has a good amount of experience and expertise in diagnosing lymphomas and hopefully has good experience with T-cell lymphomas. We also get a lot of second opinions on pathology if we're not sure or if everything doesn't totally hang together. I think when we make the diagnosis, we're sort of laying the groundwork for how we can go forward and how we can figure out how to treat that person. So getting some of that information done at baseline is often very important. A little bit about treatment. Most of the aggressive T-cell lymphomas or the T-cell lymphomas that fall under the aggressive category, which again tend to be the systemic T-cell lymphomas that may be in lymph nodes or other parts of the body, they tend to be the lymphomas that we refer to under the broad category of peripheral T-cell lymphoma. Some of the most common subtypes of those T-cell lymphomas carry the names peripheral T-cell lymphoma not otherwise specified. There's another relatively common subtype called angioimmunoblastic T-cell lymphoma. There's some other fairly common subtypes called anaplastic large cell lymphoma. And then there's a whole bunch of other less common subtypes. Most of those lymphomas, when they're recognized, will grow. Often people notice the disease or they'll have symptoms of the disease. And mostly those will be approached with combinations of chemotherapy. So a common regimen that would be used pretty much anywhere in the world would be a chemotherapy regimen called CHOP. That's four drugs, cyclophosphamide, doxorubicin, vincristine, and prednisone. There's some variations on that. Sometimes people will add a drug called etoposide. Sometimes people will give other combinations. But I think the principle is that most of those diseases are usually addressed with a combination chemotherapy approach. So those medicines are a number of chemotherapy medicines. They're usually given intravenously, and they're usually given for repeated cycles. And six or eight cycles would be fairly typical. With people who have some of the more common B-cell lymphomas, who get those same kinds of treatments, their lymphomas will usually go away. And in truth, we see the same thing with the patients with T-cell lymphoma. When they get those combinations of different kinds of chemotherapy, most people will have improvement in their lymphoma, and it'll either go away completely, what we call a complete remission, or it'll shrink down by half or more, what we call a partial remission. So in that sense, those treatments work quite well. One of the differences between the T-cell lymphomas and the more common B-cell lymphomas is after that strong treatment, for many people or most people with the B-cell lymphomas, their lymphoma will stay away and not come back. It's a little different for the T-cell lymphomas. While some people will have their lymphoma stay away and never come back, some people will have a return, and then those people often have to go on to other treatments. And there's a number of new treatments, and Dr. Rosen will talk about some of those, that have primarily been used if the lymphomas come back. Because the lymphomas do have a tendency to return, even after strong therapy, I think the other standard approach that's commonly done for the aggressive T-cell lymphomas is what we call high-dose therapy. And this falls under the broad name of things that people might be familiar with as a bone marrow transplant or a stem cell transplant, often from people's own bone marrow. And I would say that's another fairly common approach to this disease. It's not proven that it's better, but in some people who get a good response to their initial chemotherapy, some people will go on and then get this additional treatment at the end. And the goal of that is really to try to increase the chance that the lymphoma stays away and doesn't come back. And sometimes that can be successful. Sometimes it could still return, and then some of the other newer different medicines are used. I think I will conclude there and hand things over to Dr. Rosen, if that's okay.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Horwitz. Excellent, excellent presentation. Lots of wonderful information. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Dr. Stephen Rosen. Dr. Rosen is Genevieve Tuton Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology, Feinberg School of Medicine. He's Director, Robert H. Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center, Northwestern University. And Dr. Rosen is going to address new treatment approaches, clinical trials, how research contributes to treatment options, and communicating with your healthcare team about quality of life concerns. I now turn the program over to Dr. Rosen.
Thank you, Carolyn and Steve. That was an excellent review. I also would like to extend my welcome and best wishes to all of you. It's rare that we have an opportunity to speak to people all over the planet, and I hope that we can communicate this information in an effective way for you, and then during the question and answer session, answer any of your concerns. So just to reiterate some of the points that Steve made, that T-cell lymphomas are fairly uncommon. They represent in the United States about 15% of the non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, and there's different percentages as you go around the globe. They're much less common as a result to the B-cell lymphomas. And as Steve mentioned, they can be indolent, meaning very slowly progressive that we would just observe at times, or clinically aggressive that require aggressive therapies. The related disorder, the cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, which are essentially skin lymphomas, which tend to be T-cells, has been an area where there have been remarkable advances over the last decade, and we've really impacted on the treatment of that group of diseases. And our hope is we're going to be able to accomplish the same thing in the peripheral T-cell lymphomas, that entire spectrum of diseases. It becomes complicated because even within one entity, there can be many distinct subgroups. Now, two drugs that have been developed and approved over the course of the last year are Folotyn, and that's F-O-L-O-T-Y-N. The generic name is pralatrexate. This is an anti-fol, folate being a nutrient, and it affects DNA, which is the essential building block of chromosomes. This medication is given intravenously, typically given for about 6 weeks in a row intravenously with then a rest. You're evaluating blood counts because the main side effect can be reduction of blood counts, as occurs with many chemotherapy regimens. The other side effect that can be limiting is irritation of the mouth or mucositis, but it is very effective in the peripheral T-cell lymphomas. The other new agent is Istodax, I-S-T-O-D-A-X. The generic name is Romidepsin, R-O-M-I-D-E-P-S-I-N. This is also given intravenously, in this case usually 3 weeks in a row within a 1 week break. is a novel mechanism of action, meaning how it works. It's a histone deacetylase inhibitor, which we call HDAC inhibitors. They essentially affect the way genes are expressed, and they probably have other complicated effects on the cell that we just don't quite understand, but they work, and they work in particular against T-cell malignancies, both the skin lymphomas and the peripheral T-cell lymphomas. Similar to the pralatrexate or folitin compound, they can cause a reduction in blood counts, and so we monitor the blood counts. And another common side effect is fatigue and malaise with this treatment. But again, very effective and encouraging that it's now available. Some other drugs that we've used historically for B-cell lymphomas have been applied to T-cell lymphomas with some success. I'll just mention one, gemcitabine, which also affects DNA, that essential building block of chromosomes. And it is well tolerated, doesn't cause hair loss, which is also the case with the other two agents I mentioned. And blood count reductions are the main concerns. So these and other traditional agents are available to our patients. Now, in terms of clinical trials are typically conducted in three phases. The first phase, which we refer to as phase one, we're looking at how a group of patients may tolerate a new drug. And once we figure out the proper dose, we then advance it to phase two trials. Phase two trial, typically everyone gets the same dose, and we're trying to see what sort of response we see in our patients. How dramatic is the response? How long will it last? Are any of the responses so dramatic that we can't see any evidence of the disease? And then finally, for those compounds that look very encouraging, they'll often be brought to a randomized trial where they're compared to some standard to see whether they are an actual advance in the treatment of a disease. If you want to learn more about clinical trials, or in particular a clinical trial that may be available to you, there are websites that you can look at, and I understand that one has been provided to you. It's the NCI clinicaltrials.gov site, which has a database, and at the present time there are 79 active trials that are recruiting participants for individuals who have T-cell lymphomas. And so one of the issues would be eligibility. Eligibility means the criteria that they're looking at to decide who can go on the trial. So some trials may be for previously untreated patients, and some trials are for patients who have failed other therapies. Some trials may have an age distribution, or they may require certain blood count levels before you can enter the study. So it's important to look at the eligibility of the trial, and if you can't find it on your own, then to talk with your physician or health care provider, which brings me to my last topic area, which is dialoguing with your health care group. So the keys are often the physician and the nurse who have to be your advocates. They have to be knowledgeable about the disease that you have, and being able to provide you with the finest, most up-to-date care. You want to make sure you have a healthy dialogue with your physician and nurse, that you feel comfortable sharing with them your concerns, and that they're available, that you can reach them when you have a problem. In most medical centers, we also have support teams in addition to the physician and nurse that may include social workers, psychologists, nutritionists, health educators. At Northwestern, we also have an integrative medicine program, which includes aspects of Eastern medicine, such as massage therapy or acupuncture, which can be beneficial in some instances. And you should also be aware of your community resources, the wellness centers that exist, where there are groups of individuals who may share similar experiences and can help advise you about what they've gone through, and also how they've dealt with some of the consequences of the therapy that's been administered, or how they've dealt with family issues. I feel that the most important thing when you have a rare disease is to educate yourself, to know all your options, and to see who are the thought leaders in the field who may be able to provide you with information if you feel that you've hit a roadblock in your own institution. I think maybe at this juncture, Carolyn, we can move to the next speaker and then open it to questions.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Rosen, for really a very excellent presentation and very much informative about the new trials that are there and new treatment approaches and the importance of really working with your healthcare team. And our next speaker is Brian Tomlinson, and Brian is the Director of Programs and Services for the Lymphoma Research Foundation. And Brian is going to go over with you all the free support services and programs offered by Lymphoma Research Foundation. Also, I have to say that Brian is really incredibly responsible for today's program, this entire series. And I really want to thank him for his support and Lymphoma Research Foundation's support for this program.
Thank you, Carolyn, and Cancer Care for those warm, welcoming words, as well as for, as you mentioned, just a wonderful partnership on this call, as well as all the calls that we provide for members of the lymphoma community throughout the year. The Lymphoma Research Foundation, Cancer Care, and the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation partner on these calls in order to best meet the needs of people affected by lymphoma. I'd also like to thank Drs. Horwitz and Rosen for their excellent presentations. These two individuals do a number of things for the foundation throughout the year. In addition to participating on calls such as this, they review our publications, our fact sheets, speak at other programs. So we do truly thank them for taking the time to be with us today and for all that they do for the organization and for all of you on the phone throughout the year. And lastly, I would like to acknowledge Aloe Therapeutics, Celgene, and the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation for supporting today's call. The Lymphoma Research Foundation is the nation's largest nonprofit organization devoted exclusively to funding innovative lymphoma research and providing people with lymphoma and healthcare professionals with up-to-date information about this type of cancer. Our mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by this disease. LRF invests millions of dollars each year to combat lymphoma and to assist those whose lives have been affected by a lymphoma diagnosis. The foundation remains dedicated to identifying a cure through an aggressively funded research program and to helping members of the lymphoma community by providing comprehensive disease-specific programs and services, such as the call we're all on today. Our scientific advisory board is comprised of the world's leading lymphoma researchers and oncologists, and this board formulates the foundation's research portfolio, seeking out the most innovative and promising lymphoma research projects to support. To date, the LRF has funded over $42.5 million in research, and more than 35,000 people participate in our programs each year. Our programs provide a comprehensive series of information for people with lymphoma and their loved ones, including our lymphoma helpline, where our professional public health and mental health staff can assist you in your search for information about lymphoma, as well as to connect you with appropriate resources. We have a clinical trials information service where a member of our helpline team can assist you in your search for clinical trials. Dr. Rosen mentioned the NCI trials during his presentation. This call center can help you do all of that and help provide information about specific trials and do the searches for you. We have a nationwide lymphoma support network, which is a one-to-one peer support program that matches people with similar lymphoma-related experiences with volunteers across the country. A number of publications and newsletters, including comprehensive disease booklets for non-Hodgkin lymphoma, Hodgkin lymphoma, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and childhood non-Hodgkin lymphomas. A number of disease-specific fact sheets, including a number of fact sheets specific to the various T-cell lymphomas, and informational e-newsletters. We will soon be launching a peripheral T-cell lymphoma e-news update newsletter that will be made available to all of you on the call. We have a number of webcasts and podcasts available on specific types of lymphoma, treatment options, as well as support topics, and a number of in-person conferences that we hold on the regional and national levels. There are two conferences coming up. One is in Minneapolis on October 16th, and one is in New York on November 6th. For more information about the organization, please contact a member of our helpline team by calling 800-500-9976 or visiting our website at lymphoma.org. Again, thank you to our speakers, our sponsors, and to Carolyn and Cancer Care and her team for all that they do to help us on this partnership. Carolyn?
Well, thank you very much, Brian. And everyone on the call really wants to contact the Lymphoma Research Foundation. It's just a wonderful resource and wonderful materials, and as Brian had said, are able to really help you with your clinical trial searches as well. So thank you. Thank you, Brian. Our next speaker is Jennifer Viano. She is a Chief Executive Officer for the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and she is going to describe the free services that you and programs that you can access from the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. Jennifer?
Thank you, Carolyn, and good afternoon, everyone. It's been just great being with you on the call, and it's just wonderful having so many people on this call. I'd first like to thank our collaborators, Cancer Care and the Lymphoma Research Foundation, whose support really has made this call possible, along with the generous support from Allos and Celgene. And I'd love to also thank Drs. Rosen and Horowitz for their participation on the call, as well as all their support throughout the year of the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. We really, really appreciate your support. During the call, I definitely hope that all of you have learned that even though this is a rare disease, we really are so fortunate to have dedicated physicians and researchers working so hard on improving the treatments and working toward a better understanding of peripheral T-cell lymphoma. I want to also mention that the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation has a really strong dedication to furthering the support that's offered to patients affected by peripheral T-cell lymphoma and the physicians who treat these patients. So you can expect to hear more from us about what we're doing to serve our peripheral T-cell lymphoma patients. And one really important message that I want to convey today for everyone is to please keep in mind that our foundation is available anytime to help you with information, resources, and support that will help you learn about the many forms of cutaneous lymphomas, how to locate specialists, treatment options, treatment side effects, helpful tips for managing symptoms, and importantly, ways that you can also connect with other patients. I really want to tag on to what Dr. Rosen said about being, your best advocate and, educating yourself. We at the Foundation can be a really strong partner to you in that effort, so please look to us for that. Our foundation is the only one in the world dedicated to providing comprehensive support services to patients and physicians in the cutaneous lymphoma community. We exist to make sure that each person with cutaneous lymphoma gets the best care possible, and we encourage you to be in touch with us anytime that we can help you. I want to encourage everyone to please visit our website at www.clfoundation.org often to learn about upcoming educational forums that you can attend across the United States and Canada, and other educational opportunities that we always have available, such as this teleconference, to help keep you informed about how you can live the best life possible with your cutaneous lymphoma. You can also sign up to be added to our mailing list to receive our printed and electronic newsletters that announce upcoming educational opportunities and breaking news in the cutaneous lymphoma community. And in closing, I really would hope that you would think of the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation as an extended family, certainly perhaps one that you never really wanted to be a part of, but a family nonetheless, where we're really here for you, and please be in touch with us and let us know how we can help you. So thank you, everyone, for helping to make this call possible. Thank you for everyone who's participated, and we look forward to staying in touch with you.
Thank you very much, Jennifer, for those lovely words of invite to everyone to contact the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and also for your enormous support of today's program. So I want to thank you for that as well. And our next speaker is Richard Dickens. Rick is Blood Cancer's Program Coordinator, Mind, Body, Spirit Project Coordinator, Cancer Care. And Rick is going to talk about the free psychosocial services offered by Cancer Care. Rick?
Thank you, Carolyn, and hello to everyone. I appreciate the educational and expert advice of Drs. Rosen and Horowitz. Thank you. And also, as our Blood Cancers Program Coordinator, just to emphasize what has already been said, we work closely with the Lymphoma Research Foundation, Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and along with building a team within your healthcare team, you could build a network of supportive organizations and tap into us collaboratively to help you through your treatment and beyond. For peripheral T-cell lymphoma patients and their families, there are numerous issues related to treatment which can impact your quality of life. Concerns about treatment, insurance, jobs, or who will help with loved ones during treatment are common questions. Changes brought on by treatment can affect sexual and body functions and challenge most people's self-image, eliciting feelings of sadness, anger, fear, and frustration. At the same time, what is happening to the patient can make family and friends feel helpless, scared, and sad as well. The good news is that at some point the whole cancer process will become familiar to you, and you will develop what is often called a new normal. Accepting that changes are normal during treatment can go a long way toward nurturing your body, mind, and spirit and help you maintain an enjoyable quality of life. During these times, it is often helpful to seek the help of a social worker or other healthcare professionals from organizations such as Cancer Care, Lymphoma Research Foundation, and Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. At Cancer Care, along with these Connect workshops, we offer financial assistance toward transportation to treatment and some limited grants toward treatment costs. We also provide regional face-to-face groups as well as national telephone and online support groups for patients and those who care about them. All these groups are facilitated by professional oncology social workers. Most important at Cancer Care, we provide the opportunity to speak with an oncology social worker who can help you identify people and resources in your community to address your needs as they arise. Cancer Care has been around for over 60 years. All our services are free. To many, support groups and social supports go a long way in helping to confront the difficult challenge of cancer. But daunting as they are, with help, they are never impossible. You can visit our website at www.cancercare.org, or to speak to a social worker, you can call 1-800-813-HOPE. And I do wish you all the best during your journey and encourage you to reach out for all of these many supports.
Thank you very much, Rick. And actually, I want everyone to know that you're with a lot of resources just from the Lymphoma Research Foundation, the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and Cancer Care to start with, just to call to get help. That's really important. And now we have time for questions. And I know there are questions, and I know often the questions are directed at Dr. Horowitz and Dr. Rosen. So I'm going to ask Mary to bring all of our speakers on board and to actually also to explain to the audience, most importantly, how to queue up for questions so that we can start taking everyone's questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or if you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question comes from Gary G.
Yes, thank you very much for a good presentation. My question is simple. Is there any investigation ongoing into some sort of maintenance therapy, as is done with Rituxan for B-cell?
Steve, I think I can, you want me to answer this one?
Sure.
So in T-cell lymphoma, I think it's a great question, and I think it's a great idea, and something that we've talked a lot about. In people whose lymphomas have come back after initial therapy with the aggressive T-cell lymphomas, and when we look at new treatments, we often do treat in a maintenance fashion, meaning we give a medicine, and if it works well and they feel okay, we continue it often for a long time. So I think that's a good strategy. There's not been studies really looking at that systematically in patients with aggressive T-cell lymphomas as part of their upfront therapy, like is done in some B-cell lymphomas or other diseases like multiple myeloma. But there is plans in the work for what will be a very large international study, which is going to look at that, comparing people who've had initial chemotherapy, and then it would actually be a randomized study. So some people would get maintenance and some people would not. And I think as that study opens up and goes forward, which we think will happen, you know, within the next 6 to 12 months, we'll probably get some information on that. So it's a great idea, but we don't have sort of data to say it's clearly the right thing or not to do right now for part of your initial treatment.
Everyone's on the same path, Gary. That's a wonderful question, and clearly it's being worked on, and we appreciate your bringing this up, and thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Judith B.
Yes, Dr. Rosen diagnosed me with cutaneous T-cell lymphoma in 81, and I was in PUVA until 93 with complete remission. And then in October of 08, I developed a rash and an itch and went to a cancer dermatologist.
And Judith, your question?
Pardon?
Your question?
My question is, now he put me on ultralight, and I developed skin sarcoma, and so now he wants me to go to an oncologist. And I'm wondering what I should expect, seeing that I've been in remission for so long.
These are excellent questions, Judith, and there are a lot of different parts to them. I'm going to ask Dr. Horowitz and Dr. Rosen to address your question because I think there are a lot of different components. They may not be able to provide you with the exact information you need, but we hope the information they provide you will allow you to take it back to your treating healthcare team and also for everybody else on the call to get an idea of how you would approach this. Dr. Horowitz, do you want to start?
Oh, sure. I think whenever there's a question of a second disease, then I think it's important that gets sorted out as best as possible. So it sounds like there may be a different skin process that you're having now, different than the underlying skin lymphoma. So I would agree with clarifying that, trying to understand are there two processes or one here, or are they related? And then if there really is something that's a different kind of cancer of the skin, then I think seeing an oncologist is a good idea. They would also look at what the state is of the underlying cutaneous lymphoma. And then sometimes you would treat them separately, meaning you treat one then the other. Sometimes one may not need to be treated, and sometimes there's treatments that can kind of approach both. Steve, other thoughts?
The critical issue is to know what the new condition is. That's the only way you can put together the best therapy directed at the new process.
And I wonder if both of you can comment on this concept of differential diagnosis. So how do doctors determine what really is going on, just so that everyone in the audience gets a sense of that? Because everyone is, of course, from different parts of the country and world and may not have a sense of what are the different steps that often go through a physician's in terms of the
So for the T-cell malignancies, this can truly be challenging. And there are only a limited number of pathologists around the country that have the level of expertise necessary to define the specific type of T-cell lymphoma process and help then guide the oncologist in terms of the best therapy. So if you're fortunate enough to be at an institution that has the skills to make the appropriate diagnosis, wonderful. If not, usually your pathologist will share the slides with experts that are around this country or other countries around the globe. And it's also important that the oncologist have some background because it requires the input of both the oncologist and the pathologist to come to a firm conclusion. We recently had a very interesting case that was thought to be a peripheral T-cell lymphoma and turned out to be mononucleosis. So there's a real spectrum of issues that can arise.
Excellent. Thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Tamara L.
Hello. Thank you so much for offering such a program. This is all very new to me. My daughter was just recently diagnosed with, now I'm finding out the big differences, but subcutaneous T-cell lymphoma. We're at the point of deciding remission. I'd like to know, are there any best methods or ways for determining when a child especially is in remission? I mean, we've done PET scans. Is that the preferred way?
And how old is your daughter?
She's 14 years old.
Okay, excellent. Dr. Rosen, do you want to comment on this?
Oh, the subcutaneous T-cell lymphomas are very, very rare. So, again, the most important thing is that you're in an institution that has the expertise to know how to do the reevaluation. In many instances, you'll find no obvious disease inside the body, and it could be a more critical evaluation of the skin. So depending on where you're located, I could give you better advice of who may be available to help with a second opinion or the evaluation.
Okay. And Dr. Horowitz, do you want to add anything? Or?
No, I agree. I think you really want to make sure that the people have some familiarity with rare diseases, and then often for the subcutaneous ones, which means that they're just below the top layer or sort of in the second or third layer of the skin, you can see them, but I think also PET scanning is one of the better ways to evaluate that. So that's how we would generally approach someone with a subcutaneous lymphoma for evaluation.
Also, can you comment on just the major centers? And I know that we often call them in the United States, the National Cancer Institute designated cancer centers, the comprehensive centers. Could you each speak to those, what they are, why they're considered to be designated centers?
So I can address that. I'm the director of Northwestern University's Comprehensive Cancer Center, and Steve is at Sloan Kettering, which is one of the most distinguished comprehensive cancer centers in the country. In the United States, the National Cancer Institute has set aside money for now 40 comprehensive cancer centers. Some states are fortunate to have several. For instance, in Illinois, we have the University of Chicago and Northwestern. Some states, unfortunately, do not have a comprehensive cancer center. And the designation is by peer review, that your peers feel that you meet criteria for excellence in terms of advancing both basic and clinical research, as well as doing cancer prevention work. That's the designation of the comprehensive cancer centers. There's also an entity called the National Comprehensive Cancer Network, which is 21 of the elite cancer centers, again, including Northwestern and Sloan Kettering. And here we've brought together the talent throughout the country to develop guidelines, standards of care for a spectrum of diseases, including the T-cell lymphomas. And you can actually go online to the National Comprehensive Cancer Center website and see what the experts say are the appropriate therapy for your disease.
And Tamara, can you indicate what state you're in? That would be helpful.
Yes, I'm in Maryland, and we're currently at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland.
So Johns Hopkins is a phenomenal institution. You also have the National Cancer Institute, which is a short ride away. University of Maryland has great talent as well.
Great, great. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And also, could you comment on the National Cancer Institute's clinical trial center as well?
Yes, the National Cancer Institute has had an intramural program since I was in my training. I actually went there for my oncology fellowship training in 1979. It's a phenomenal program, but the trials are fairly restricted, so you'd have to check in advance whether or not they have a trial that's related to your specific disease. They only accept patients who are eligible for a clinical trial.
Excellent. Okay, thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from LaRonda H.
Yes. I was diagnosed last month with peripheral T-cell lymphoma, and it has not shown that it has spread to any other organs other than the lymph node in my neck, which was removed. As well, my bone marrow biopsy has come back negative, which is good. I was wondering, is there, outside of the CHOP treatment, is there any other treatments that I could possibly take other than the chemo?
Dr. Horwitz, would you like to address that?
Sure. Yeah, for the peripheral T-cell lymphomas, even if they're localized and even if they're removed, we would think from what we know about that disease that most people would have it come back at some point. Radiation is something that can be given if the disease is very localized. But again, we don't think of that as a potentially curative treatment, meaning a treatment that would have a good chance of making it go away and never come back. So there are a number of different treatments, but if it is one of the aggressive T-cell lymphomas, usually the best chance to get rid of it for good is with combination chemotherapy. There's some variations on CHOP, but it would be similar type approaches. If your doctors thought that this was an indolent or one of the slower-growing lymphomas, then sometimes there's a lot more variation in terms of milder treatments that can also help control the disease. But generally, we don't do that for the aggressive diseases if a person is healthy enough, you know, sort of to go through those types of therapies.
Can I just add that it would be important if you're presenting with an isolated lymph node, which is a little bit uncommon in the peripheral T-cell lymphomas, though definitely occurs, to make sure the pathology is reviewed by someone who's got experience with peripheral T-cell lymphomas.
Yeah, I would agree. That's very important.
And would that be at a comprehensive center or a center that really sees a lot of this type of cancer?
The pathologists usually know who their colleagues are who have expertise in these different diseases. Mm-hmm. Now, they publish on their experiences.
Excellent. Okay. So that's very important for everyone to be aware of, that is actually very important to be sure that the pathology report perhaps is even reviewed by someone else. Is that a recommendation or sometimes a thought to do?
Unless you're comfortable, unless your physician is comfortable with the skills of their pathologist.
Excellent. Now, you know, we're often asked, you know, people, of course, they have, as you all know, a limited amount of time with their physician visits sometimes, and often people, it's hard to kind of pose a question. And so I'm going to ask our two speakers to actually perhaps make a recommendation, each of you, a recommendation, a brief recommendation in terms of a kind of takeaway from today's call, kind of a quick tip that you would want to keep with you as something that you want to really have in mind when you see your doctor, and as a general information that's really good for you to be aware of asking. And I'm going to ask Dr. Horwitz and Dr. Rosen to weigh on in this, and just to give something that you can take with you in addition to listening to the entire program today, just a kind of quick recommendation or tip that you think would be really important for people to remember from today's program.
Want me to go first? This is Steve Rosen.
Yeah.
Well, the most important, as I mentioned earlier, is that you feel comfortable talking with your physician and nurse, that there's an open dialogue, that if you have questions, they're available. During the rush of a busy clinic, you may not be able to get all the information you like, but hopefully your physician would be available by a phone call, or in my case, often patients will email me questions, and then I'll respond either by email or when we're together. If you are frustrated because of the dialogue you're having with your doctor, then you have the wrong doctor.
Well, that's an excellent point. So the concept of getting a second opinion is something that people can be aware of, that's something.
Yeah.
Okay. And Dr. Horwitz, do you want to?
I think there's a lot of things, and I agree with a lot of that. You want to have a good back-and-forth communication with your physician. And I think particularly if you have a rare disease, I think you want to establish that you're comfortable in terms of your understanding with what you have and what the plans are and sort of what that means. And what I encourage, I think, people to do is if you feel like you're not getting the information you want, think about what you're really trying to get, because sometimes the way we doctors think about words like prognosis, we think about them differently than you might think about them, and try to think to yourself, you know, what specific piece of information am I not getting, and then ask that. And then I also think with a rare disease, not everybody can be treated at the biggest centers, you know, where we see a lot of these patients, and there's a lot of very good oncologists who take care of all kinds of cancers. So if you see a doctor who's maybe not so familiar with that, I think that with this kind of rare lymphoma, I think that's okay, but you just want to make a sort of a joint decision of, okay, so how are we going to find out about more, and then what are we going to do, and do we need a second opinion, or does your doctor need to communicate more? But just to make sure that you're comfortable that sort of the plan is explained to you, and that you really try to articulate as best your questions if you feel like your questions aren't being answered, because sometimes it's as simple as we think you're asking a different question.
Excellent. Well, these are excellent recommendations, and we hope that today's call has been helpful to all of you. I do want to thank our speakers. They've really been outstanding, just a really wonderful speakers, Dr. Rosen, Dr. Horwitz, Brian Tomlinson, Jennifer Viano, and Rick Dickens. And all of you who've queued up and asked such great questions that enhanced our call today, and you have been listening as well. I want to remind all of you that this is a one-hour program, and that in planning a program like this, we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. And with that in mind, I want to remind all of you about all the services that you can access from the Lymphoma Research Foundation, from the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and Cancer Care. Most importantly, as we conclude our program today, I would not want anyone to feel that you are alone in coping with lymphoma. I want you to now know that you're part of a community of support, and that you can access help at any time. We're all simply a telephone call away, or you can visit our website or email us all. We're all really here for you. So people do feel that they are alone, and we don't want you to feel that way. We want you to know that you're part, we know that you may feel that way, but we want you to feel that you're part of this support community and to take advantage of these services. To get help from all of us. I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's workshop. You may now disconnect and have a wonderful day.